Are you an insider? Subscribe to FC Insiders today to receive full, unedited interviews, news, rumors, exclusive content, and more. Join FC Insiders at futurecommerce.fm. Future Commerce is brought to you by DotMailer. DotMailer is faster, smarter, and better email marketing automation. DotMailer is trusted by thousands of leading brands around the world. You can start your free trial today at dotmailer.com/futurecommerce and be sure to use the offer code FUTURECOMMERCE for 20% off applicable DotMailer packages. All right, welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
I'm Brian.
And today we are joined by a very special guest, the VP of Strategy for Magento, Peter Sheldon. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having us.
I should have cleared your title that I had it right. You are in strategy.
I am a strategy. I am in strategy, yeah.
Yes. And often labeled as a retail futurist.
Yes. My history prior to Magento, spent 5 years at Forrester Research, and I like to think that I'm a retail futurist. Yeah.
Nice. Yes. Well, that's great. Welcome to the show. We're glad to have you join us, and we're going to get into some of that futuristic retail strategy and technology and talk about what Magento is doing here today. But if you're new around here, we want you to give us feedback about today's show. Make sure you leave that in the discuss comment box on futurecommerce.fm. And we also want you to make sure you can subscribe on iTunes, which is now called Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and everywhere else you get your podcasts, including Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and the rest. You can also listen on your Amazon devices, and we'll trigger some here on the show floor. They've actually got a whole host of those Echo devices sitting out. And you just, all you have to say is, Alexa, play Future Commerce Podcast. Anyway, well, welcome. Brian and I are very excited. We've been sort of champing at the bit for almost a year now to get someone from Magento on the show. So we're glad to have you with us. Tell me a little bit about who you are, for those who don't know, and what role you have at Magento.
Yeah, I don't know. So Peter Sheldon, and I head up all of corporate strategy at Magento. I think people often ask me, well, you know, what does that entail, being the strategy guy? So really, it is looking into the future. It's a little bit looking into the crystal ball. Where are we as a company going? Where are our merchants and our customers going? And trying to sort of anticipate not the needs of, you know, what our merchants need from the platform in the next 6 months or 12 months. That's already sort of locked in, and we know what we're doing there. We're taking a more, you know, holistic, you know, long-term view of, you know, where's online commerce going? Where's retail going? What are the solutions and tools that as a platform provider we need to have, you know, in the platform 3, 4, or 5 years from now? So, you know, that's R&D. It's strategic partnerships. It's M&A that we might execute on, and really sort of trying to build that picture of where are we going?
It might and do execute on.
Yes.
I would imagine your background at Forrester probably helps with that process quite a bit. Maybe talk to me a little bit about, you know, that transition from being an analyst for 5 years and then jumping into this, you know, product company, this young, young-ish company.
Reborn company.
Reborn, yeah. Company, there, yes. Yeah, no, what was that process look like, and How was that transition for you personally?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I was at Forrester for 5 years. I think, you know, incredibly privileged role to be there and be an analyst at Forrester. You know, people often ask me, you know, what was it, you know, you enjoyed most about that role? And it was the interactions with all of the e-commerce practitioners. You know, Forrester generally works with larger enterprise clients, and the opportunity on a daily basis to have, you know, literally back-to-back 30-minute phone calls with, you know, VPs and C-levels at, you know, all, you know, major retailers and branded manufacturers and so forth. And to, you know, hear firsthand, you know, the challenges that they're facing, the things they're thinking about, the investments that they're considering making, and being sort of, you know, part in sort of the thought process of helping them along that way. So, you know, very, you know, privileged role, and sort of a two-way process, you know, being able to help them, but also being able to draw insights from all of those conversations to start doing the analyst thing and sort of figuring out, well, what are the trends and what are sort of the some of the emerging changes that are happening in the industry, write about that and so forth. So, you know, incredibly fun role, but, you know, ultimately quite academic in nature. So, you know, glad to be sort of back on the, on the vendor side and, you know, actually turning some of that into sort of real products that, you know, we can bring to merchants.
Yeah, that probably feels really nice to be able to actually like do some of the things you've talked about and thought about and wrote on for so many years. Like now you actually get to implement.
Exactly. I think that's, you know, that was, if there's one frustrating side of being an analyst, it's, you know, you're always giving these, you know, giving this advice, you're writing these reports and people are reading them. And sometimes a little frustrating that you're not actually part then of delivering that those ideas and delivering the innovation.
Nice. That's cool.
You get to prescribe, but not do.
That's the easy part.
Yeah, exactly.
I've said for a long time, we engage in some client work in the Magento space and you've seen a lot of success there. And I realized when I moved into what I guess we call thought leadership now, it's so much easier just to kind of, you know, spew all kinds of of strategic decisions to people who, you know, lap it up and it's not on you to actually deliver it. Now you have to deliver. So I want to jump in a little bit to specifically what Magento is doing that's sort of centric to what we talk about on Future Commerce, which is pushing the limits of digital commerce and retail. Yeah. And I know that you, Magento, just announced a program, an innovation lab program, to try to harness the power of the community that's behind Magento and leverage that to highlight some innovation in that community. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Magento is a very sort of unique, you know, platform in that, you know, we're backed by this huge community. There's, you know, 250,000 developers and architects sort of in that community who, you know, use Magento, who make a livelihood, you know, either working for the merchants, working for our system integration and digital partners. And they're a huge part of contributing to the innovation of the Magento platform. You know, part of Magento's, you know, heritage is that, you know, we're open source. And so, you know, with that, the community contribute back, you know, to the platform. And we've been trying to sort of encourage a more sort of active participation there. And so if we think about this ecosystem, you know, these are, you know, merchants, system integrators, individual contributors, they've always innovated on Magento. It's always been core to the value prop of what Magento is. But I think sometimes, you know, there's some really amazing things that the community has built on Magento, but there hasn't necessarily been a forum for them to sort of talk about it. So what we're trying to do here with creating the Magento Innovation Lab is create a sort of, you know, more formalized mechanism for awareness around these innovations. I think in part so that the creators of these innovations, you know, can get some kudos and, you know, it's a very sort of vibrant community and creating awareness of what's been done, but also for the merchants themselves. You know, the merchants, I think, are, you know, very keen to experiment with you know, potential new innovations, but they want to do so in a sort of in a low-risk fashion. And so making these innovations, creating awareness of them and a mechanism for the merchants to sort of see what's out there and what's coming is kind of key to what we're trying to do.
Mm. That's awesome, yeah. Tell me a little bit more about the mechanics of how the program is going to work. What's the submission process look like? Yep. And how are you going to be displaying what it is that people are working on? Is it going to be at Imagine, your conference, or is it going to be something that happens throughout the year? How is it going to work?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think when we think about sort of ingenuity and innovation, there's a couple of things. Certainly on the Magento world, you know, there's a ton of contributions back to the platform that I would call are improve the sort of the back end processes, they you know, maybe developer tools, it may be tools that make the day to day sort of operating procedures for the actual merchandisers, you know, more efficient, you know, better tools on the back end. And when we love that innovation, but that's not the key focus of the lab. What we're really trying to focus on the lab are innovations that disrupt the shopping experience for the consumer, and really sort of drive either a differentiated way of buying, not necessarily online. This is where you know, cognitive commerce and all of that type of stuff comes in. But also to look at innovations that are actually driving top line growth for those merchants that are, you know, really going to disrupt and bring sort of new ways for the merchants to sort of accelerate their revenue growth. So, you know, from a submission process perspective, this is open to the whole ecosystem. We're looking for innovations that haven't yet been commercialized. So, if it's something that's already been commercialized, well, there's already a path to market there. We're looking really to sort of foster innovations that are a little bit sort of, further back on the development curve. But we want stuff that's real. We're certainly not looking for vaporware or slide deck only materials. This has to be something that, it doesn't need to be production ready, but we have to be able to see that it's real and sort of test it. So we're accepting submissions. It's an ongoing process. We'll certainly be using Imagine as a great launch board to highlight some of these innovations, but this is an ongoing process. This isn't sort of a one-time thing. We're going to be actively recruiting innovation going forward.
Nice. Yeah. So what are the qualifications? You mentioned that the qualification process is it's not commercialized yet. It's sort of like a But it's not vaporware.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty specific category. So I'm guessing this would be things like one-time implementations with specific merchants.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we'll see submissions from a variety of different backgrounds, but we know already from the submissions that have come in, I think the most common place of these type of innovations are actually from our system integration and technology partners. We have 350 formal partners there who implement and manage Magento on behalf of our merchants. And these guys are creating, some great innovations, sometimes for the merchant. So sometimes the IP may be owned by the merchant, in which case it's more of the merchant to submit the innovation. But a lot of the times, the IP is actually owned by the system integrator and may have been built more of a proof of concept to help sort of, in the sales process. And so that's where we're seeing a lot of the submissions come from.
What are you seeing come in so far? Like what's...
I could tell you, but I...
General categories at least?
General categories. I think it's, we're certainly seeing, things around Alexa and sort of, conversational, commerce and voice-based commerce. I think it's, AR and VR, we've seen some submissions there. Some really exciting stuff, but my lips are a little sealed at this point.
Sure. Yeah,
I have to ask because my sense is that in any program, especially one like this, where you're leveraging, I like the way that you put it, the ingenuity of the community, the SIs and the merchants have a very specific niche that they're fulfilling right now, in that it's all, to this point, has been mostly direct-to-consumer sales. It's mostly B2C, and they're mostly retail brands that are, taking over some D2C operation. So I'm curious if with some of this conversation that you're having around innovation in B2B and some of the how your platform is evolving into a more B2B centric platform, what kind of how would you frame the customer facing non-commercialized component for those who are trying to innovate in the B2B space?
Yeah, I mean, there's just as much innovation happening in B2B as there is in B2C. I mean, we see a fairly dramatic shift in sort of the opportunity funnel at Magento, not just from sort of pure B2B merchants who are your industrial manufacturers, your wholesalers, your distributors. We're seeing a lot of our sort of, lead volume come in from merchants on both sides who want to do both B2C and B2B together. So, a lot of retailers, for example, who already have a direct consumer online channel, but want to now facilitate a more sort of efficient process for their wholesale channel and using B2B, commerce there. And then vice versa, a lot of sort of more on the B2B side, traditional B2B side, industrial manufacturers and so forth, who are creating new digitally enabled products that they actually want to try selling direct to consumer, or at least sort of disintermediate the traditional selling channels of their sort of wholesalers and their distribution channel. So, going back to innovation, I think it's just as applicable in those spaces. If we think about things like, VR and AR, this is probably far more applicable in B2B than it ever will be in B2C. I mean, we see IKEA and we see Target and others, doing some great innovation. visualization to help you visualize, especially things like, you know, home furniture. But this is actually much more applicable in the B2B space when you get into, you know, the construction industry, whether that's, you know, home construction or commercial construction. You know, one of our clients, you know, that I was actually on site with a few weeks ago, you know, Steelcase, and they're, you know, supplier of, you know, office furniture, and they have this amazing lab environment where it's all virtual reality. And so you can, you know, completely custom design your entire office space, but see it virtually before you ever actually place an order.
Wow, that's awesome.
And so, you know, there's definitely, you know, I would almost argue more innovation happening in B2B than there is in consumer.
It's interesting that you mentioned specifically in manufacturing and construction, because a lot of the innovations in IoT are happening in those same spaces. And we're seeing, and as much as we, you know, sort of want to pan the fads and the trends that we see in, at least in consumer retail innovation, things like beacons, they tend to fall out of favor. They're not as sexy anymore, but they're actually finding real, in some cases, if I'm being really honest, there are solutions in search of problems. But in many cases, manufacturing and construction are finding real innovation in those technologies, and not just from being able to apply things like data analytics, gathering that they never had in those industries before, but even just to streamline their own supply chain.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I think actually it's not as sexy, not to use the word a second time, but it's not as appealing, especially for a brand like Magento, which for me, I've sort of identified with as a, you know, I don't know, there's a je ne sais quoi. What's the word? There's like a, I don't know. It's a sexy brand. It is a young brand, who is in a sea of blue around it, of old storied brands like SAP and IBM to some degree. And so you've always been the upstart. But now as the business scales and you start taking over the larger portions of market, especially in the B2B space, how do you retain the essence of the brand being that scrappy upstart and still providing the enterprise type solutions to B2B? It's going to be that's a challenge, I think.
It is. I mean, I think, you know, people ask me, you know, what's life like at Magento? And what I often say is it's, you know, we're sort of an enterprise startup. You know, we're big, you know, large company. We have, you know, 700 employees around the globe, but, you know, being independent and, you know, having spun out from eBay, we've certainly got a very sort of, you know, agile, you know, startup sort of internal culture. And so, yeah, I think, it is critical to, you know, where we're going that we retain that and that we foster that within, you know, not just our internal employees, but using, you know, making sure that, you know, that agility remains throughout the community. So, and I think the community is critical to that, because that's one of the core differentiators for us is the open source, you know, foundation of the platform. And having this community that contributes back to the platform, because it allows us to go faster than any of our competitors, because we have this sort of extended R&D team that you know is hundreds of thousands of people strong.
Yeah, I think to kind of riff on that a little bit more, you know, some critics might say that, you know, because Magento can do so much, and now, you know, you've been declared a leader in the Forrester B2B way from mid-market, you can do so much that the like marketing messaging is kind of hard to define. And so we're like, when we were on Jason and Scott, that was kind of like, they're like, okay, what's like the core message? So how is that process coming? Like, you guys can do so much, and you're hitting, you know, the SMB market, you're hitting B2B, you're hitting mid-market and even up-market. So how do you sort of, what's like the, that message that
I think, you know, a lot of it is, you know, we're investing heavily in sales and marketing, and I think, you know, marketing is really key, making sure that, you know, we're not just Magento or, hey, this uber flexible can do everything, because I think, you know, there is a limit to you know, perhaps as we do mature and go into large organizations, there's some doubt about, well, you know, is the framework type of thing the right thing for us? So certainly creating more sort of industry specific, you know, vertical solutions, leveraging our partners. Yeah. You know, we, as you know very well, you know, we have the marketplace of extensions, and there are many thousands of extensions for Magento that are built by the community. But actually, helping our merchants to say, listen, these are the extensions that are more specific to B2B, that are specific to perhaps to the automotive industry or the pharmaceutical industry, and creating packages or bundles of sort of, you know, a verticalized, almost a sort of verticalized instance of Magento. So I think that's one of the things that we're very smart. Focused on.
I like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting approach. I'm sort of pretty well known for being hyperbolic in most of the things that I say or think, or at least I'm just loud about saying them. I just gave a new version of the talk that I titled about a year and a half ago called The Shopping Cart is Dead, which I know you guys love that title.
Yeah.
And we happen to be sitting here at shop.org in a hall full of people that run shopping cart platforms, and we're at an inflection point. I mean, Amazon's patent on one-click has expired. Or at least that's what people, I'm not a lawyer by any means, but that's what people keep saying. I know that Magento has a community engineering team who we're seeing some people in the Magento space start to already innovate in that way to bring that capability to Magento. I know that, I think Internet Retailer Magazine just wrote an article on that. So what do you think the future, the near future looks like for shopping cart platforms and direct-to-consumer shopping cart platforms? Are we moving away from the allegory, the real world analog of throwing items into a basket and pushing it around a virtual store?
Yeah. So I love your analogy. You know, the shopping cart is dead, but I would actually argue it's not the cart that's dead, it's the checkout that's dead. You know, I did some writing and been talking a little bit about what I call the Uberification of commerce. And what I really mean about that is just, you know, if we think about what Uber really did for us as you know, consumers, it just made the experience of getting a taxi ride just so much more just easy and efficient. And I don't need to turn my brain on. It's a bit like what Google Maps did for us. I can stop using my brain, and that's kind of what Uber did for us as well.
We use our plastic brains
exactly. So you know, I don't need to think about paying or getting the receipt or doing my expenses. It's just all managed for me.
Right.
And so, you know, and I think you can apply that analogy into commerce. And so, listen, the cart's still there. We need a cart because a lot of the time we buy more than one thing. And yes, there's a lot of scenarios where that one-click ordering button and that sort of Amazon dash button type of thing. So certainly in sort of consumable goods, you know, reordering, you know, the things that I buy all the time that I, you know, certainly my groceries and that type of stuff, you know, there's applicability for just sort of almost what I call sort of an unconscious purchase. You know, that ability to sort of, you know, maybe this is going to go even beyond, you know, speech, and we'll get into sort of where Elon Musk is investing in his new brain company, and we'll just think about it. It's like, you know, I know what it is. I buy this brand all the time. I just need more of it. And so it's a completely unconscious decision. I just need to think that I need more, and it shows up on my doorstep 2 hours later. Then that's fantastic. But there's a lot of purchases still where I need a cart because I'm buying more than one thing, and I need to sort of package them all together, and then I need to buy them. But this concept of, you know, entering my billing address and my shipping address and my payment, that's almost dead. And I think, you know, we see a ton of innovations. You know, we've got, you know, the Amazon Pay team here, and you know, there's a lot of, you know, PayPal and others, you know, who have, you know, accelerated checkout mechanisms, and there's some innovations coming in the web browsers, in Chrome and others. There's the web payments request API, where you'll save all of your preferences, your shipping addresses, and your payment information in the browser. And so I think what we'll see is the buy button will move from the checkout process to the cart page.
Yep. Mm. We're actually, I've coined the term Groundhog Day. It's very, it's a novel. I'm going to trademark it.
Yeah.
But that's what checkout has become. It's Groundhog Day. We keep living the same experience over and over and over again at every brand that we visit. Mm. If I had to divine what the near future looks like, I don't think that it's a mistake that marketplaces have become so ubiquitous, because that's how we shop in the real world. Mm-hmm. I think that's how we think, is that we find a place that aggregates the kinds of brands together that we want to engage with, that fulfills a specific need, whether it's quick and cheap, or whether it's, you know, catered and sort of curated for our tastes. That's really a move towards what we're looking for. I'm more interested in, I'd love to see Magento's investment continue in things like the order management platform, where it can power all of commerce, mm-hmm. no matter where it's coming from. I know everyone is sort of heralding the death of omnichannel, but we have more places to purchase now than ever before. And if we're going to really truly get to places like social commerce, if we're going to use social currency to as our means of, like, if we're getting into ambient commerce where it's thought-based, like all of these things that could be on the horizon need to be powered by a platform of some kind and not just catalog-based. And so I really feel like I've said, that sort of dovetails into answer the question I just put to you, is that Magento actually has a suite of tools to actually be able to handle and consume those things. But again, you know, it's a challenge to implement those for a certain segment of the market.
Yeah, I think, you know, we think what's going on here, and you know, where, you know, Magento was and where Magento is, you know, and this is the same for all the commerce platforms, you know, it was a website and it rendered HTML, and you know, the assumption was whether that experience was consumed on a mobile device or, you know, on a desktop browser, that, you know, you browse and you add to cart and you check out. And what we've done is, you know, with you know, Magento 2 is, it's all API enabled now. So, you know, we often find clients using Magento in what we call a headless fashion, where we're not rendering any experience. You know, the experience is something else, and it may not be a visual experience. And it may be an app, it may be a website, but a lot of the time it's not. It's an IoT ordering experience. Mm. It's a machine learning algorithm that's placing orders on your behalf. It's coming from another channel that you don't control. It may be voice activated, brain activated, whatever it may be. It may be your fridge, which has you know, Amazon cameras all in it, that's, you know, monitoring, you know, how much milk you have left, and is machine learning the milk consumption of your family, and the fridge is placing the order for
God,
you.
God, well, please, I need that.
We all need that. It's coming. Yeah. I guarantee you.
Yeah, we talked about the idea of personal inventory quite a bit on the show.
Yeah.
And that how that's definitely something that's coming up. But I don't know if consumers are quite like ready for that yet. Like, there's a lot of families out there that don't want their milk levels being monitored.
I don't know. I think, you know, I think, you know, we you know, there's disruptors out there like Amazon now with the Whole Foods acquisition that are really well placed to drive that type of innovation into the home. You know, we saw that, you know, the announcement, but, you know, from Walmart this week, that, you know, they'll let the delivery driver unlock your front door for you and, you know, put the milk in the fridge.
Yeah, and it's just mind-blowing.
You know, at the end of the day,
with Ring, right? There was a partnership with Ring, or
with the home automation door company. Yeah,
and August.
That's it. Yeah. So, you know, consumers, you know, are we worried about letting someone into our home? I don't think so. I think, you know, I think just the convenience of that is incredible. So it's all about convenience and removing friction from our, you know, we're impatient individuals in this modern society. And, you know, there's sort of old-fashioned processes that we still put up with that are ripe for disruption.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Future Commerce is brought to you by DotMailer. DotMailer is used by thousands of marketers around the world. It has quick and easy campaign creation with a world-class intuitive interface. The DotMailer team is always on hand, from email creation, creative, and delivery to dedicated consultancy, helping you build your own success story. DotMailer is built to play well with others. You can build your own marketing cloud by extending DotMailer or integrating it with your existing e-commerce and business platforms. Become a smarter, faster, better marketer and create sophisticated and measurable campaigns with DotMailer. Go to dotmailer.com/futurecommerce to start your free trial today, and be sure to use the offer code FUTURECOMMERCE for 20% off DotMailer packages. Thanks again to DotMailer for supporting Future Commerce.
One thing you said a while back, you started talking about improvements in web browsers, and I know right before you announced the Innovation Lab, you also made a really big announcement about your investment in PWAs.
Yep.
You want to talk about that a little bit?
Progressive web apps for those who are not affiliated with the term.
That's right. So I think, you know, many of the listeners on the show probably are like, what's a PWA? And as Philip just said, it's a, you know, progressive web app. The way to think about this is, it's all of the things we love about a native app, in that there's generally a native app has a slicker, faster, more engaging experience than that same experience in a web browser. And so what PWAs do is bring a lot of the advantages of a native app into the browser. So primarily speed, you know, a lot faster in terms of, you know, the page loading. In fact, the pages actually don't load anymore. They progressively change. So you never see that sort of page refresh happening and having to wait while the next page loads. And so you get a far more app-like experience. There's a lot of other advantages as well. But I think the key thing, advantage for the retailers, is that they don't have to go and build an iOS app and an Android app, because that's a huge investment. It's, you know, it's typically a seven-figure plus investment, which is why, you know, the ones that do it well, the Home Depots and the Amazons of the world, they have huge budgets for their app development, and it's a phenomenal experience when you're in that app. But most of the merchants here at Shop.org, you know, they don't have those kind of budgets to invest in apps. And so I think PWAs will be very, very disruptive, because it's just open web technologies. It's HTML, it's CSS, it's JavaScript, and it's going to bring all of the advantages of an app into the browser. So, it, you know, it, and that's it, it's just an evolution of the website in the same way that we evolved from pinch and zoom desktop sites to responsive design. We're now going to go from responsive design to PWAs.
And I think that there's a lot of innovation that can take place from there, because we have hardware access to things like camera, body data sensors, like accelerometer, altimeter, all those sorts of interesting.
The infrared camera.
Yeah.
That.
Oh yeah, there is. There's a. Actually, that's interesting. You should bring up a little bit about that, because we actually haven't talked about.
Yeah, no. Apple's
Face ID.
Face ID through the Apple 10, not Apple X.
iPhone 10.
Is it iPhone? Yeah.
iPhone 10.
iPhone 10. Yes.
I'm never going to get this right.
I know.
I'm going to continue to screw it up.
10.
Yeah. Still say OS X. I don't know. what's interesting about that is, you know, if you follow the Apple, you know, developer curve, is there's either a 3-year timeline for them to open up, you know, the infrared camera to developers, or a 0-year time, like it'll never happen. So I'm interested to see how that goes. I really still feel like there's so much more opportunity. I actually like Touch ID. Mm-hmm. I kind of don't want Touch ID to go away. I kind of like Touch ID.
We kind of need to wait till November and actually have the phone
to see if
we fall in love with Face ID or not.
Just hold it up.
That's true. It's interesting, because a good analog to that would be I was the one who was crapping all over the AirPods a year ago, saying they're, you know, it's just a terrible idea, and I now have a pair and they're magical. but it's interesting. So with progressive web apps, the ability for us to tap into all of this hardware functionality on the phones is going to be a game changer. So, you know, the ability for you to have, you know, image recognition for brands and for barcodes and things like that actually could be an evolution of the digital commerce experience for brands.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, why we're so excited, and, you know, we're investing heavily in developing PWAs for the Magento platform is, you know, we've got a sort of intrinsic issue in sort of e-commerce, where, you know, all of the merchants have seen their traffic shift from desktop to mobile. And, you know, most of our merchants, 60-70% of their traffic now is coming from mobile devices into the mobile browser. But yet the mobile browser is the worst form of conversion, even though we've got great, you know, responsive websites, and, you know, all of our digital agencies spend a lot of time trying to create that as good as it can be. It's not converting as well as a traditional desktop site, and it's certainly not converting as well as a native app. I mean, I think, you know, for me, when I use Amazon's native app, it is just such a phenomenal buying experience.
Yeah.
It is far easier to buy something from Amazon.com using their iOS app than it is using their desktop site.
Yeah.
And so if we can bring, you know, and the conversion rates are sort of typically around 6% for native apps, they're still, you know, 3-4% on desktop, but they're only sort of 1-2% on mobile. And PWAs offer this, you know, perhaps still slightly sort of hypothetical promise to bring mobile experience ahead of the desktop experience, and move those mobile conversion rates from 1-2% up to, you know, higher than the desktop. And that is, I think, game-changing for the whole industry.
I have to wonder about some of the, you know, the SMB retailers that you have that have been on Magento for some time that might say to themselves, I'm still struggling trying to keep up with the thing you told me last year, which is increased transparency in supply chain and better control over inventory and visibility into that for your customers, and this is what's going to change. Now I have to build all, you know, a native app-like experience. What do you say to merchants who feel like there's a struggle to keep up with the technology where to place their investment?
You know, for sure, you know, the pace of innovation in this space, and it's driven, you know, more, you know, by Silicon Valley and you know, all the tech innovations, and Apple just, you know, just talked about just putting more fuel on the fire. But you know, you either embrace or you die. And so, you know, when we look at things like, you know, PWAs, you know, there'll certainly be a lot of merchants that don't want to be early adopters. There will be others that do, but even if you're not going to be an early adopter, you certainly don't want to be a late adopter because this, you know, it's innovations like this where there's a real ROI. You know, even if you don't have budget to work with your digital agency to, you know, upgrade to PWA next year, chances are you can get the business case and take it up to your C-suite and your board to get budget because, you know, there's such a compelling ROI on the impact it'll have on your conversion rates. So, you know, I think there's some innovations that are, you know, shiny objects that are sort of experimental with the very questionable, you know, ROI on the investment. And then there's others that are just, you know, crystal clear.
Oh, Mark Lore was sort of asked that question yesterday, or Lore.
Yeah.
Mark Lore. As I found out, his name is
Lori. The classic thing.
Yes. I was asked that question, like, what investments do you, or what technologies do you see as hype for retail? Mm. And which ones do you see as, like, here and now, like, you can realize an ROI in the next 3 years?
Yeah.
What would you say about that?
You know, I think there's very few technologies that are just completely horizontally disruptive, and I do think, for example, PWAs are one of those. But a lot of these, you know, things we get hyped up around you know, augmented reality and virtual reality, I think are very, very disruptive in certain industry segments and completely irrelevant in others. So, you know, your ability to get excited about an innovation really depends on the applicability of that innovation in your industry. So I think for most, you know, most retailers, AR and VR is probably a fad. However, if you're a, you know, furniture retailer, this is probably the single biggest, most important investment you can make.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a little bit of, you know, this, it depends.
And there's going to be some who will never grok it, no matter what you do.
True.
You know, I had an interesting conversation last week at Connected Commerce in Connecticut. We spoke there, and we were talking about some of these things. And we talked to a textile, like one of the largest textile companies that has historically B2B business, been in business 110 years here in the United States. They said, if we don't have augmented reality in an app in 18 months, we're done. Mm-hmm. Like this is yep. necessary
yep.
For our business. You know, the response that I got to kind of putting that out to the Twitter sphere, the response was, well, does an AR app help me sit on the couch and try it out before I buy it? And I was like, well, that's just such a silly argument because you're buying couches and beds and mattresses and pillows online without trying those out too.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's some that are going to be naysayers no matter what you do, yeah. but I do think there are.
Branded manufacturers are sort of in this sort of, you know, they're either going to innovate and disrupt themselves or they're going to die. And, you know, the mattress industry is just such a fascinating case study for this. You know, we've seen Casper as well as a number of other startups. And Magento has, you know, a number of these actually on running on our platform, absolutely disrupting an industry that thought it was, you know, as safe as it, you know, that, you know, foundationally safe. Yeah. Like, who is ever going to buy a mattress online? Well, it turns out actually the experience of going to a mattress showrooms, you know, and speaking to us, you know, the traditional sort of salesperson in that showroom is such a horrific experience
yeah.
that it's just actually so much nicer to buy your mattress online.
It's true. Yeah.
I get a little nervous though, because I see retailers with a very, very different business model to a Casper, which is, you know, venture funded and in the Valley and has, you know, incredible amounts of money they can lose and burn through before mm-hmm. they ever, you know, capture a significant amount of the market to be profitable, if that ever even needs to happen. And what you see is what they've disrupted is the consumer sentiment and being able to buy something like that online. And it's actually translating into success for all of the old stalwart competitors who have the storied businesses. So you now see the gel foam, you know, shipped to your house mattresses from everybody, from Sealy and Serta. And mm-hmm. yeah, they're all realizing an uptick
but they're all sort of desperately trying to, you know, catch up. And, you know, I think there's sort of the classic, you know, innovator's dilemma of the one who the first to market
right.
is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So I guess my question would be is how does Magento and its innovation broadcast innovation and how quickly it moves as a platform and not be the first to market that gets lapped by someone who realizes from all your, you know, learns from your mistakes?
I think that's a risk, you know, we embrace, you know, like I said earlier, you know, it's kind of core to our culture now is, and it always has been, is just sort of agility and innovation and moving fast. And also, you know, in some ways, not being afraid to fail. I think, you know, we talk, whether it's, you know, Magento or sort of any, you know, technology or disrupted firm, you know, you have to try. And you know, if you fail, you just, you know, you certainly don't take that to heart and you move on to the next thing. So but if you're not willing to you know, take some risks and at least, you know, experiment with emerging technologies and see how they're going to be applicable in your business, then yeah, you're probably not going to be around. And that period of time of, hey, you know, we're not going to be around, I think that's accelerating. So if you sit still and you don't innovate, you know, it's not like, oh, well, this could impact us 5 years down the road. No, we could be out of business in 18 months.
Yeah, no. So in that vein of like taking risks, what would you say that would be the top few technologies that you think that merchants should invest in right now versus, you know, what, or for the here and now versus what should they be investing in for like the next 3 to 5 years out?
Yeah, you know, I think for a lot of merchants, there's some constraints around those decisions because, you know, there's also budgetary constraints, but there's also just practicality constraints around a lot of it. They're sort of their back office, you know, IT infrastructure, you know, their ERP systems, their finance systems, and those type of things that actually constrain them, you know, so unfortunately, sometimes in adopting these type of innovations. But mm-hmm. to sort of, you know, answer your question, again, you know, It depends. I mean, certainly, you know, I think, you know, with the new, you know, innovation that, you know, that we're seeing in, you know, from Apple and so forth, I do think we're sort of on that cusp of a wave of innovation in AR and VR. You know, the Microsoft, you know, stuff is really, really interesting as well, you know, the hologram. And that, I think, can be really, really disruptive. And yeah, we've been talking about it for a few years, but I think we're on the cusp of that actually, you know, going mainstream and taking off. But it won't be applicable to every merchant. So you've got to really think very carefully about the use case of, it all comes back to, will this technology make for a more efficient buying and purchase experience, a sort of seamless, frictionless buying experience for your consumer. And if it doesn't add any value, then, you know, don't invest in it.
Yeah, that's pretty much what Mark said. He said pretty much most of these trendy technologies have use cases.
Yeah.
You just have to be thoughtful about whether or not they apply to your customers.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, and then the other thing is, you know, I think with some of these, you know, emerging technologies, you mentioned beacons earlier, Philip, you know, potential. I mean, you know, I think we're kind of past the beacon phase. I mean, also NRF 2 years ago, you know, like there was a beacon on every booth and every vendor was talking about beacons, and it's sort of, don't hear too much about beacons these days. But I think the classic reason for that is that you got a technology that is potentially very, very disruptive, but it hasn't gone mainstream, i.e. there were all these issues of, you know, you had to have a phone with the right version of Bluetooth and you have to have Bluetooth turned on and blah, 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 blah. So you actually start looking at sort of an adoption funnel and you find that, you know, well, only 5% of the consumers actually would be able to make use of this. So, you know, you have to look at, I think, the maturity of the technology, and sometimes you have to wait sort of 2-3 years for that change in the consumer adoption of technology, so everyone's on the latest iPhone and that type of thing before it becomes real.
Yeah, and I think there's also a lot of other location-based technologies that are emerging that are probably a lot more, they make a lot more sense than beacons. Yep. So beacons were like an early phase of something that's now like using some other different technology to actually implement what beacons are trying to solve.
Yep.
And so that's why I think we're seeing them phased out. If we didn't have any other way to track where people are, then maybe beacons would have done better.
I love that I brought beacons to shop.org 2017. Oh, that was, I brought it up. It's my fault, everybody. I'm sorry. That's on me. And let's all remember that I'm the one who said it. It's funny, we do this sometimes, and I'm curious because we didn't talk about it before, so I'm just going to throw this out.
Do it.
We sometimes do a lightning round on what your take is on certain cutting-edge technologies.
Let's do it.
So I thought I would...
let's lightning round it.
Let's lightning round it. So since I broached the topic, I'll do the first one. What's your take on machine learning and AI, and how does that... What's the near-term impact for merchants?
I think I'm very bullish on it. I think there's an impact for the merchants and for the consumers, the buyers. I think on the merchants, it's going to bring a lot of efficiencies to what I would call sort of common medial tasks that the merchandiser does. And I'm thinking classic merchandising, you know, price optimization, offers, you know, just general merchandising, you know, of you know, on their site, you know, for the merchandiser to come in at 9 a.m, sit down in a seat, and for the AI engine to have sort of done it all for them, and or at least sort of prescribe, here's the things that we think you should do today and why, is hugely powerful. I mean, you know, it's going to really improve the efficiency of merchandisers, make them more effective at merchandising, and do so at a much lower cost. I mean, a lot of merchandisers really struggle to recruit, you know, good merchandisers, and it'll also make those merchandisers better, because the sort of medial kind of long tail tasks will be taken over by the AI ML engine, and it literally allows them to focus on sort of the more sort of strategic, you know, promotional activities that they're focused on. So I'm pretty bullish on that side of things. And then I think for the consumers, you know, we touched on this a little bit, but just learning algorithms about what it is you buy and why. So, you know, going back to the fridge, I fully believe that we're not in the too distant future where I don't need to worry about ordering groceries. You know, my fridge and my cupboards will become intelligent, will be IoT connected, and will learn what I cook, what I eat, what my, you know, and will at least get, you know, 80% of my grocery ordering completely automated for me, and ML will be critical to enabling that.
It's interesting because the future commerce drinking game is when we say there's no reason why this couldn't happen today. I don't need cameras in my fridge to make that happen. I just need to keep shopping at the same retailers and have some loyalty with them so they get to learn, you know, my consumption habits. All right, lightning round, go ahead.
Okay, voice. You know, voice technology and its application in store or an app. Or, you know, in any way.
Yeah, again, you know, very bullish on voice. I mean, I think, you know, we've seen, you know, the adoption of Alexa or Siri and you know, all of this, you know, the voice assistants, you know, happen far faster than perhaps any of us would have predicted 3 years ago. So, you know, I think there's a huge applicability in commerce. Obviously, you know, Amazon already, you know, have mastered this, but, you know, in the broader realm across, you know, all the retailers and merchants. Again, I think it's in these sort of consumable products that we order all the time, where we don't need to think about the price point or what it is we're buying. I know exactly what it is I'm buying. You know, I need a six pack of beer, and, you know, just being able to do that via a voice where I don't have to pull my phone out of my pocket, I don't have to open my laptop. That I think is absolutely going to take off. You know, well, voice, I think, you know, has some applicability in sort of, you know, customer service and sort of post-sale support. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's, you know, the classic sort of overly simplified example of, you know, hey, you know, where's my product? You know, that classic, you know, the, delivery time thing, but more sort of in sort of aftercare support issues, that type of thing. But I think, you know, when it comes to sort of more of that sort of high consideration purchase, you know, where I take, you know, weeks or months to research, you know, something that, you know, it has a high ticket value, and, you know, you really need to sort of embrace the brand. I'm not sure that voice is going to play a role there, but yeah, certainly very excited in terms of, you know, those sort of renewable. The way I sort of think about it is, you know, we went from one click being sort of the innovation from 15 years ago when Amazon first brought it out for reordering things that I buy all the time. And then, you know, we had Amazon, you know, bring along the dash buttons, which I think is a little bit of a fad, you know, having these little Wi-Fi operated dash buttons, but voice removes the need to even press a button. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they, you know, if we want to, you know, look way into the future, then, you know, if Elon Musk succeeds and connects our brains to our phones, then I won't even need to open my mouth. I'll just think.
Yeah. I'm going to make sure I capture the time code so that we can cut this out 10 years from now. Look how funny and how young and foolish we all were then. Do you think that there's any use or any benefit to retail in any way for making use of body data and all of the things that go around that, whether it's identity management or you know, some sort of federated identity management? I'm curious your thoughts on there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely useful for the merchants, but I do think we're in a phase of a higher degree of security scrutiny from the consumers. You know, we always hear about the millennials, you know, having, you know, not caring about what they post on Facebook and sharing their identities. And I think, you know, with the Equifax breach and this type of stuff, you know, consumers are really getting, you know, a little more conscious about, you know, sharing that kind of data. I read a fascinating article actually just yesterday about a user who'd requested through sort of a Freedom of Information Act all the information that their one of the social platforms had about them, and they got a 600-page document back.
I saw that. Yeah, was crazy.
It was crazy. So, you know, I think consumers are becoming a little more just conscious and aware of, you know, they're not, you know, not just that they've, you know, they're sharing important sort of secure identity information like, you know, my facial recognition or whatever it is, but just other stuff that I didn't even ever contemplate that these tech firms were tracking about me.
Mm. Yeah, we were just talking about this last night, like identity management online and what can be tracked and what can't be tracked and how hopefully in the future we'll be able to add a little bit more, like some more gates, like maybe even have personal bots that crawl the web for any instances.
This is Brian. Yeah. I will disavow any personal bots crawling the web talk. That is all Brian.
I'm looking into the future.
I think that the paradigm has to change entirely in the way that social networks created a brand new way for us to interact with the web. I really feel like the control of our identity is going to require an evolution of the web beyond what we have today. And I think we could get there. It comes with pain. And I don't know how much pain we're willing to tolerate right now around identity. It's definitely top of mind, especially around security issues. Yeah. Actually, speaking of pain and identity and security, what do you think of cryptocurrency?
Mm. Oh, gosh. this perhaps isn't an area that I've spent enough time, looking at and thinking
Perfect.
About.
I want to know exactly what you think.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'm still, a little skeptic. I heard that Amazon are planning on accepting, Bitcoin later in the year. I don't know if that's true or not.
I think I saw that.
I think it's something that... perhaps we need to watch and embrace, but it's still, I think, in the sort of very early phases, and I think, we're going to see the regulatory establishment, push back very heavily against this. We've already seen, JP Morgan and investment banks, very, very clear in their opinion on it. So, it's certainly an area that, as tech evangelists, we should probably be embracing and researching more than we are today.
So, it's interesting to me... SEC's cyber unit just basically put out a notice. SEC.gov has a news on a press release that they're honing in on blockchain and ICOs specifically to protect retail investors, which I find sort of terrifying. this is what it took for SEC to get involved into regulation of to protect retail investments. I find that interesting. We just don't have, I think, enough. I know I'm going to say this and anger some people. I just don't. For all the conversation about innovation and payments, I don't see a lot of innovation in payments. I mean, all the innovation in payments is happening in a way that doesn't actually touch the consumer directly necessarily. It's innovation that's happening that's streamlining, 45-year-old systems and mm-hmm. making them more efficient. If you want to talk about true innovation or a paradigm shift in payments, I mean, crypto is that.
Yep.
I just don't know that we can...
One thing that I do see in payments that I do like is Amazon Payments has really focused on single sign-on, mm-hmm. and they just released with Magento, right?
Yep,
the ability to, in your Amazon account, you can say, I'm signed in all instances of Amazon Payments that are enabled for this, and then you can just check out with one click on those sites without having to sign in because you're already signed in.
Right.
Which is pretty cool. That's something that people have been trying to crack for a long time.
Right.
So Amazon's doing some cool stuff there.
I think when we think about innovation and payments, there's been a lot of focus on removing the friction from buying, and that's great. I shouldn't have to ever enter my credit card. I shouldn't even need a credit card in my wallet. I mean, I do love, Apple Pay kind of digitizes the credit card, and that's fantastic. But, until we get to a truly cashless society, banks stop actually having checks, there are still people who write checks, and so we've got some the until we go completely digital from a currency perspective, we've got a long way to go.
It's like it's still a pretty significant portion of payments. Checks are like 8% of at least bills.
Yeah. And it's B2B, it's small businesses. Yeah. They still, you know, issue paper-based invoices and they expect to be paid by a check. You know, that there's an entire, you know, multi-trillion dollar industry that still does things in an incredibly antiquated way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if they would just get with the times and use EDI, then that was probably the nerdiest joke I've ever made on the show. It's interesting. We've talked a bit about blockchain and how it, you know, might relate to other areas other than cryptocurrency. What kind of innovation do you see in not particularly blockchain, but innovation on supply chain management?
That's good. On demand manufacturing, right. Things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think, you know, this, it all ties back to personalization. You know, brands are trying to differentiate themselves and create, you know, in some ways go direct to consumer and disintermediate the, you know, the sort of the retail store channel, the resellers and so forth. And so we've seen it for years, you know, being able to do customized products. A lot of the footwear companies did it, you know, the mountain bike manufacturers are all doing it. You can do a custom paint job on your new mountain bike and stuff. And so there's a ton of innovation happening there, but, you know, obviously there's an aspect of needing the configurator on the front end of your e-commerce site and the whole brand experience. But the bigger challenge is the supply chain if you want to start doing that now, because, you know, the consumer is used to 2-hour delivery, and now, you know, it's like, oh, it is a 6-week delivery because, you know, we have to, you know, make this thing in China and get it shipped to you. So, you know, there's definitely, I think, a lot of disruption on that supply chain where, you know, the final personalization, assembly, whatever is going to happen, you know, onshore, you know, perhaps in the distribution center in almost a real-time fashion, and then get, you know, shipped still within 2 hours to the consumer. But, you know, we're going to move sort of that finishing process of the manufacturing isn't going to happen in China anymore. That will happen domestically here in the United States.
So,
but that's a huge, you know, huge chain on change to supply chain.
Last mile manufacturing.
There we go.
Yeah. I like that.
I should trademark that.
Amazon drone.
Of course it exists already.
No, I was going to joke. You know, the Amazon drone will actually be etching your watch while it's flying
as it's
to you.
That's a great place to end. What's the outlook? What's next in the next 5 to 7 years in retail? What are we focusing on?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, we're going to unfortunately probably continue to see sort of more big failures. You know, we saw Toys R Us last week.
Right.
There's going to be more of that. And you know, I think e-commerce will get more of the blame for those type of things. You know, the shift to buying online is going to continue at an accelerated rate. You know, we're becoming more and more comfortable. Innovations like PWAs are going to make it much, much easier to buy on mobile devices. So, you know, all the analyst forecasts for CAGR of e-commerce growth, I think maybe conservative. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, I think, you know, brands and retailers are going to be investing more in sort of the flagship store model and these experiential, you know, following in the footsteps of Apple, obviously renaming all their stores to town halls or whatever they're calling them now. But I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
Experiential retail.
At the end of the day, you're buying one of two things. You're either buying something that's a commodity that you're not putting any thought process into, and that's, you're going to do that through voice and e-commerce. You're not going to go to a store anymore. But things that are, you know, part of a brand experience where I have a brand affiliation and there's that considerated purchase, absolutely I'm going to want to go to that, you know, flagship store and embrace and feel and know the brand. So I think, you know, it's a little bit of a tale of two cities.
Yeah, some of the best brands have already been doing that.
Absolutely.
Up in Seattle, like REI has really, like, they captured that years ago.
Yeah.
Like the idea of the flagship store and like the experience in the store.
Yeah, I was up in Detroit a couple of weeks ago visiting one of our clients, Shinola, and, you know, their flagship stores are just, you know, phenomenal.
Filson's, their sister company, their flagship stores in Seattle. It's also amazing.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, it's funny that you mentioned it that way. Didn't Nordstrom just launch a pilot of...
store with no inventory.
Right. It's like West Hollywood.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess I know where we're going on the
way home.
On the way home. That's great. Well, thank you so much, Peter Sheldon from Magento, and glad to have you with us, and thank you for co-sponsoring the podcast booth here at shop.org.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
What's the next event that you guys are putting on?
Our events are... Team sitting right behind us here. No, we'll be at NRF in January. Okay. And obviously, we've got a sort of back-to-back Magento community events that are always ongoing between now and then.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Thank you for joining us. And thanks for listening to Future Commerce. We want your feedback, as always, so make sure you hit us up on futurecommerce.fm. Leave us a 5-star on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. But until next time...
Keep looking towards the future.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks.